Need a new dependable set of tires for your summer road trip?
Oh gosh, yeah.
Come give Independent Tire Dealers your hometown tire team a visit. With more than 50 locations on both sides of the river, there's an Independent Tire Dealer near you. With over 20 recognizable brands to choose from, featuring the top of the line Kumho tires, there's a tire to fit your needs.
Tim, you're exactly right.
Every Independent Tire Dealer location is locally owned and operated. Visit ITDroll.com or call 877-ITD-ROLL and find the location near you. ITD, someone you can trust.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
The Big Gigantic, they'll be playing at Lou Fest, and that takes place on September 10th and September 11th. You can get your tickets on InsideSTL.com. It's the Independent Tire Dealers and InsideSTL.com partnering for the promotion taking place September 10th and September 11th at Lou Fest. You can get your private Inside STL tickets by going InsideSTL.com and entering Free Dotem. Doug, something, a battle cry that is near and dear to your heart.
Not necessarily my heart. I don't know why so many people stand up for Vile. I
think it's about redemption.
I don't appreciate
my redemption.
Shawshank. Love those sisters.
What has the guy done to get his redemption?
Did a lot of good
French
works.
French fry bucket hat.
Also a lot of good works for the stadium.
He's done nothing.
The Inside STL experience at Lou Fest is made possible by the Independent Tire Dealers, your hometown tire team at ITDroll.com. Over 50 locations in the St. Louis area and over 20 brands to choose from featuring Kumho tires. We're broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Gateway at I-270 and McDonaldville are there having a huge summer sell-down event. All remaining 2016 vehicles must go. This means huge savings. If you are shopping for a new vehicle, take $11,000 off MSRP on both the 2016 Buick Enclave and the 2016 GMC Sierra 1500. These vehicles will not last long, so take advantage while inventory remains. Visit Gateway Buick GMC in Hazelwood off I-270 and McDonald Boulevard or shop online at stlouisbuickgmc.com. It's Gateway, I-270, and McDonald Boulevard. Joined by Amy Trask in the 8 o'clock hour, and we will be joined by Richard Deitch coming up in about 6 minutes here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. The closing ceremony on NBC averaged 16.8 million viewers. In 2012, it was 30.6 million viewers. Do you think the Olympics and the Olympics millennials are not as interested? I read that article yesterday. I know I have zero interest in the Olympics. Zero. Mm-hmm. But that isn't new. I've always found it to be, and I get it, it works. Like the, you know, we create a feature story out of everybody and they've overcome adversity to get here, or they have somebody in their family who is dealing with something.
Dying, yeah.
And then you put the slow music and the dissolve edits.
Right.
Emmy.
And you get your
tearjerkers. I felt that way when it started. I had that who cares about the Olympics when it started. And then once it got going, then I was hooked. I love watching the track. The volleyball's fun. I like the soccer. There's just a lot of it that I really like. And then I'm always sad that it's over at the end.
I enjoyed watching the handball, which is a pretty cool sport that is not played at all in this country.
Right.
It's a mix between soccer, basketball. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I admit that, you know, maybe you don't think you're going to get into it. And then once you start watching it, it is compelling. I agree with you.
I liked it. I did. I liked the swimming as well.
There are some,
and I always miss it. I'm sad the night that it's over.
This is an event.
No, yeah, the rhythmic gymnastics. It was girls with little floaters going. I was like, really?
And the synchronized swimming deals too make me giggle a little bit.
Yeah,
but a lot of it is compelling. Sometimes you're watching an event that the United States isn't in, and it's still compelling.
Oh yeah. Although. Again, I had zero interest going in. I said, well, this is one Olympics that I'm not going to watch. I've always been so excited in years past when it rolls around. But then when it started, I was in.
I wish I would have seen more of the boxing, too, because Olympic boxing's pretty entertaining.
Did you see some of the judging in the Olympic boxing?
No, you had told me.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, to the point where they fired three of them on the spot. There was one fight. Apparently, somebody from Azerbaijan sent millions of dollars to the Olympic Committee, Olympic Boxing Committee. and they had a couple of boxers who were literally getting their brains beat in. And in the third round, one guy in particular was on his hands and knees. He'd been knocked down three or four times in the final, and the ref wasn't counting. The ref was not even counting, was just saying, get up, get up. And the guy would stagger to his feet after what must have been a 10 or 12 count, and get hit and knocked down again. The referee, not counting, get up, get up. And then they'd have the decision, and this guy would win. I mean, it was like something, a comedy routine.
Well, then the judges had to be in on it, too.
They were, and they got fired.
And the ref.
Yeah, they all got fired.
Well.
At the Olympics, really? You think we wouldn't notice?
Well, it's a sweet science. A lot of
there's not much
things that I know about the layman like yourself might not know.
Yeah. It was embarrassing.
Adik Dotem, Doug, you were asking about what he's done. To have this support. Now, he's up to close to 1,500 Twitter followers,
okay,
which is more than a lot of stars the Cat in the area have by about five times. He's a guy who emails in, on this show. His most recent tweet is, the thought of tearing off Brian J. Fisher's overalls with my teeth and flat pinning those ears back make my loins drip. Hashtag think about it. Then I look to see who Brian J. Fisher is, and he's the host of Focal Point Radio on the American Family Radio Network.
Always turn his attention to that guy. Good. We got him out of here.
He looks to be about a 70-year-old gentleman from Tupelo, Mississippi.
Good. Let him deal with it for a while.
And does he tag him in on the tweet?
Yes, he does.
Now, what possesses a man to do that? Why would you do that?
He gets into it. I mean, he looks at Brian J. Fisher. He's probably a fan of his presentation and thinks about tearing off his overalls with his teeth.
And he's not trying to be vile. He's just suggesting that maybe you think about it.
No, he's right. Trying to be vile. He's absolutely trying to be vile. That's who he is. That's what he does.
Did that gentleman respond?
Not as a
hello?
Bit.
Hi.
Yes.
Hey, listen, I know you guys were talking about it earlier. My wife and I use coconut oil for lube.
Doug?
You use what now?
Coconut oil. We use it for lube when we bang.
Okay.
So you need lubricant, do you?
No, we don't need it. We just like it. And then we use it for face wash, and then we also cook with it.
Huh. Three birds.
Darren, I wasn't listening this morning. Darren sent me a text, said you guys were talking about it, so I called in.
Not so much, really, no. Uh-uh. No, we hadn't talked about it.
It's a good update,
hey,
though.
Did Tom come in yet?
He is standing outside. Doug, take a look at that. It's salt and smoke, and it's brisket galore.
He's got a big box, too, doesn't he? I bet there's a lot of food.
Look at that. Wow, wow, wow.
Can I tell him sorry in person? I need to apologize to him.
Okay, well, let's get Tom in here. Plowhawk, can you get Tom in here? There's the sea monster. We'll escort him into the studio. We're going to have to get him headphones, Doug. We call him cans in the business. The only way. Tom from Salt and Smoke. Caller Adam's on the line, and he wants to apologize to you, but I don't know if we have headphones. Here's the Sea Monsters getting headphones for you. All right.
Call it an operation.
Here you go. Go ahead, Adam.
Oh, hey, Adam. How you doing?
Thomas?
What are you doing, buddy?
This is the first time we've ever spoke without texting and things like that. You know what I mean?
I'm crying a little bit. This is heavy.
Hey, I wanted to apologize because I went and I had sugar fire yesterday.
You don't have to apologize for that. That's a great
place. Well, I just feel bad. I felt like I cheated a little bit.
No, that's all right. We have an open relationship.
You and Mike Johnson do?
Yeah. And caller Adam.
Do you guys use coconut oil as lube, Tom?
I like to leave my options open, I suppose. Yeah, occasionally.
You don't have to answer.
I don't have to answer any of this. Oh, no comment, I guess.
All right. Anybody wants Tom's secret brisket recipe, send it to me. I got to go.
Sorry to bother you.
Great call.
He called us, or we called him. I thought we had Richard Dice go.
Sorry,
Tom, it's wonderful to see you. I went to Salt and Smoke and picked up brisket on Saturday.
Oh, my God.
Were you there? I was looking, and there was a guy who looked like you, but I'm like, that's not Tom. But I'm like, he wants to look like Tom. It's like everybody here is going to start shrinking and shaving their head.
Everybody needs to have a beard there.
Yeah, it seems like
it.
It was packed.
It was, yeah, Saturdays are good.
Packed.
I can't believe you picked up yourself.
I know. Well, I was playing golf, and I was heading back down 170, and I'm like, Let's get salt and smoke.
Great idea. You yes, nailed
indeed.
It.
I did nail it. Yeah. I did. God, is that, it's so good. It's so good.
It is great. Is it the brisket good. I'm smelling, or do you have like a brisket-based cologne?
A little bit of both. Yeah.
Because it smells great. And your commercials are the best thing on the station, 10 times better than this
show. Yeah, we might just run your commercials instead of our show.
Okay, that's fine. I'm good with that.
All right, Doug.
Sure.
Doug, you like that?
Who puts the commercial? You think of all that, and you put it together?
Thinking is a very, very strong word. Yeah, but...
Okay.
Yeah, Seamar basically does all the heavy lifting.
Oh, he does.
That.
Yeah,
Seamaster. Don't mess with the Seamaster.
No. Yeah. Well, they're very nice. Yeah. Probably selling a lot of product, too. Right?
Oh, yeah. You guys have increased business by at least 2 or 3%. It's been great.
Look at that,
yeah.
Doug. Look at that. 2%.
2%.
You got to cut it. Are you thinking about creating another location? Are you putting it in the spot here? But I just wonder about that.
We are. Yeah, we're looking. Yeah. We've been looking. We have an offer out on a spot right now.
Wow.
Can't
look
talk
at this.
About it, but.
Doug, yeah.
Manchester.
Probably an NDA. Doug, there's probably an NDA.
Manchester near Bope needs one.
Boy, I'll tell you.
Oh, is that your neck of the woods?
Nape of the way. Yeah. Boy, we wouldn't rent. Oh, of course.
Jesus, that's
look
great.
At us. What do you think? We're not fabulously wealthy? Wow.
I should have known better.
Yeah, of course. My God. Yeah. Boy, that would be nice if you put one right around there, though. I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well, done. We'll do
done.
That.
Sweet, Doug. Yeah, that's done. Anything else you want, Doug?
Very, very, very easy. I want some of the brisket.
Well, I have got here. Some. I brought tons of it.
That's fabulous.
It'll all be gone before your next break.
I know. If Roderick's here, it will
sure
be.
It will be. Yeah. Roderick's on his way in now.
It's Salt and Smoke, the official brisket of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Pony up right there. Delmar, on the loop. Tom, Salt and Smoke.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to see you guys.
Well, thanks for coming in, Tom.
Have fun with your radio show.
Thank you.
Have
fun with your radio show.
Like it's a toy.
Richard Dyche of Sports Illustrated, SI.com, with us here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. You, by the way, you guys have not increased the business of Richard Dyche by 2%.
Yeah, I think we might happen soon. We might cost you some business, as a matter of fact. It's always great to have you on the show. We really enjoy our conversations anytime you drop by. And I was reading your Twitter feed and also your pieces on the Olympics. When we were just discussing the drastic drop in the opening ceremony ratings numbers, nearly 50% from 2012. What do you think attributed to that drop?
Oh, are you talking opening or closing?
Closing,
yeah. Massive drop. You would have expected the numbers to be down because Rio obviously has trended down since London significantly. But 50% is a really stunning drop. The only thing I can think of is a number of things. I think there's a little bit of Olympic fatigue from these games. I'm not exactly sure why. And I do think I think viewers are saying something specific about the closing ceremony, in that as an entertainment or sports vehicle, it's not particularly interesting. I don't think it's about, like, you know, who the hosts were. I don't think it's about NBC's presentation, which was very similar to previous closing ceremonies. But, you know, as sort of an entertainment program, the games are done, the events are done, the sports are done. So unless you're just sort of interested in seeing, like, a theatrical performance, and I think you'd only be interested if you're really maybe into the city or the country, not really the most compelling watch. That said, and you got to be fair to NBC, you know, they still drew 17 million people while the Mets and Giants on ESPN drew a million. So they're still destroying everything in their path. It's just far less than it was in London.
I don't know if the opening ceremonies were critically approved of, because I saw some of it and I didn't like it, and I was wondering, maybe people saw the opening ceremonies and they had already seen the synchronized swimming, so when the Olympics ended, it was over for them.
Yeah, you know, the opening ceremonies numbers were down, still much higher than the closing ceremonies. I think, if I remember right, something like 25, 27 million. And I'm with you, at least in terms of as a viewer watching it, it was not, in my opinion, a well-done broadcast. From it felt very much like kind of a Today Show, Macy's Day Parade feel. And so I guess if you like Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira, et cetera, it was a program for you. But, you know, and it's all anecdotal, but most sports fans who I talk to, especially who love the Olympics, thought it was not a good production, too many commercials, and I was with them on that. The difference is, I would say, you know, and the biggest difference, of course, is that the events are still to come. So you are, if you're going to be into the Olympics, you're very excited about seeing people walking to the stadium. I think the way the Parade of Nations exists at the opening ceremonies, where each nation walks out under its flag with the athletes, as opposed to the closing where everybody walks out together, that's pretty cool television. I think it's interesting to see, like, how many athletes are from Ethiopia, how many athletes are from Italy, you know, what does the United States contingent look like? So the opening ceremonies, to me, has a lot more than eBay. To me, that's far more compelling than the closing ceremony, just at least in terms of an entertainment vehicle.
I think it's kind of sad and maybe telling about our current culture in America that when the Olympics ends, we're not talking about Usain Bolt's performance or Michael Phelps or Simone Biles or anything else that happened, but Ryan Lochte trashing a bathroom. That's
yeah,
kind of the last image you have. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a number of factors at play there. I think people would be talking about Bolt if he was American. So I think that is an issue. As incredible as he's been, and I've seen him live in two Olympics, he's Jamaican. And, you know, we're not reading about him. We have not read about him every day for 4 years in the way we might an American athlete. And so I think the carryover for foreign athletes doesn't extend. But that's probably true for Americans as well. It's not like we're talking about Phelps and Ledecky and Simone Biles on a day-to-day basis every day. The Lochte story just represents something well beyond Ryan Lochte, and that's, you know, whether it's the image of the ugly American or whether it's the image of a foreigner in America sort of, you know, dissing our country. And not to mention the fact that he lied. And listen, there's no doubt that I think they were robbed, perhaps extorted. So both there's fault and guilt on both sides. But Ryan Lochte just compounded his initial kind of mistake by telling this like fantastical tale to the biggest entity that is covering the games, NBC. And it's a network and that's looking for stories. And beyond that, there are 1,000 or 1,500 or 10,000, whatever the number is, journalists in Rio. The games are coming to an end. They are looking for stories. And if you give them this narrative of four American swimmers getting into some kind of situation in Rio, either a robbery or vandalizing a gas station, it's inconceivable that they wouldn't cover it. So much attention on Lochte, obviously. And the story continues as the sponsors drop him. You know, but let's face it, Americans, we kind of like a story of people, someone being taken down and then someone sort of rising up on a comeback. That's kind of, and we sort of live for those stories. So I wouldn't be surprised a year from now or 2 years from now if Lochte at 34 is swimming again and says, I want to make Tokyo. You probably see a lot of, like, stories where you're almost rooting for the guy to come back from his Rio games and succeed.
I'm kind of suffering from Lochte fatigue, but one thing that does intrigue me, and maybe I have it wrong, but this all got started because he told his mom a lie. Right, or at least fudged to the story
right.
With his mom, and then she repeated it to a media outlet. Is that how the whole thing got started?
Yeah, Lochte, it's not perfectly clear what he told his mom in full, but what he told her, sort of distilling it down, is that he and three other swimmers were robbed after going to a party at a Brazilian swimmer's either home or club in Rio. Lochte's mom just so happened to be on a bus heading to close to the Olympic Village, where I think she wanted to just sort of connect with him because she had not seen him since he told her this story. The people who were on the bus just by chance, happenstance with Ryan Lochte's mom, were television journalists from Fox Sports Australia. Ryan Lochte's mom told these guys what Ryan Lochte had said, and they asked her to go on camera. She said no. They did ID themselves as reporters. I don't think Ryan Lochte's mom probably connected that they were going to report this, but they put their notes together. They put an on-air story on Fox Sports Australia, which probably didn't get any pickup in the States. And then when that reporter, a guy named Ben Way, put on Twitter, Ryan Lochte's mom just told me that he and three other American swimmers were robbed, that's when it exploded. And obviously then every American journalist who's in Rio you know, is getting a call from their bosses saying, Ryan Lochte just got robbed. You got to find out what's going on here. So in theory, I guess, if Ryan Lochte doesn't tell his mother that story, or if he doesn't tell her anything, there's a very good chance that this doesn't get out. Although I would think there's just too many people involved, from three other swimmers to, multiple people at the gas station to some kid who was a translator for the swimmers and the Brazilians. I'm always of the belief in news and in journalism, stories get out. That might have been a story that got out after all of these guys landed back at the States. So I think it would have gotten out, but it would have never been nearly as big as it was, given what Lochte told his mom.
How did you think NBC did in general covering the games?
You know, I'm mixed. I think, you know, I think a lot of it depends on where you live. If you're on the West Coast, I think you think NBC is horrible. You're not happy with tape-delayed events. You're not happy about having to wait 3 hours after the East Coast gets something, and you've read all about this on Twitter. If you look at, you know, you're probably not happy, I think, across the country with sometimes how they package stuff, very much soap opera, melodramatic. The gymnastics are the perfect example of that. But then I think if you're going to be fair, if you have a cable subscription, NBC was incredible. You had access to essentially every single sport live whenever you wanted it by streaming it. You also had some great world announcers who were calling stuff, perhaps at times better than NBC. I thought they did a great job on track and field. That part of the meet was so exciting. And Otto Bolton, to me, is one of the best analysts on television in sports, regardless of the sport he does. I thought the swimming was great. Really great images, and it's a kind of just fascinating theater and drama there. I thought NBC, if you watch shows away, if you watch the sports away from NBC, like on NBCSN or Bravo or some of their other channels, I thought their coverage was fantastic. I mean, if you were into volleyball during these Olympics, indoor volleyball, you essentially saw the whole tournament. If you love tennis, you just kept it on Bravo. You saw, I mean, incredible stuff from Del Potro beating Djokovic and Rafa Nadal. So it's a mixed bag. It depends on sort of what you wanted out of the Olympics and your framework. The one place where I think NBC totally punted was if you watch primetime in particular, you never really heard a bad thing about Brazil. You never heard about lack of ticket sales. You never heard about the poverty around the stadiums. You never heard about an IOC member being arrested, basically, from Ireland. So that's a fair criticism, too, is that NBC kind of, you know, they Disneyfied these games, basically.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated, media critic and host of a podcast, which I would highly, highly recommend, our guest here on the Appliances Counter phone lines. And I want to discuss your podcast, but also podcasts in general and the monetization of podcasts. Richard, so let's start with yours. Once again, for those who haven't subscribed to it or listened, I would highly recommend it. You've been doing it for a while now. Are you enjoyed doing it, and do you see traction with an audience now?
I do enjoy doing it because it gives me a space to, it gives me some room to roam with a guest. You know, like it's much harder to do in print form.
You get some great guests.
I mean, that's mostly because of where I work. So, trust me, it's not my personality. but it's great. It's great to like be able to just talk to somebody for like 40, you know, to get Vern Lundquist and talk to him about his career for 50 minutes or something like that. So I do like it. I like the format. I think it's very intimate. I think it's great engagement with an audience. In terms of podcasting in general, still a very hard thing to monetize, even at a place like mine. I mean, we do have sponsors, but, you know, sometimes the sponsors come, sometimes they go. The only place that, and by the way, apologies, I'm in New York City, so of course there's sirens going on.
You about to get arrested?
I think I'm all right at the moment.
All right.
You know, unless you are a very, very big name, like a Bill Simmons or an Adam Carolla, or that kind of level of podcast, Serial, I think it's very hard to make a lot of money on this stuff. But I do think it's a growing field, and I think, and you guys would know this better than me even, if you talk to your 20-somethings in the audience, I think they digest podcasts a lot. I think they just like the medium. I think it's kind of it feels like a young person's medium.
You are correct.
I think, you know, it's never going to be as big as TV, and it's probably, you know, it's never going to be as big as other stuff. But I think it's a great thing. And for like a show like yours, and you guys know this, it's a really phenomenal thing to have like the on-demand ability to listen to, let's say, your show if I happen to just not wake up this morning in podcast form. And that's where, and I give ESPN Radio a ton of credit for this. They've done an amazing job in setting a podcast network out where if you missed any of the ESPN national shows, you can get it in podcast form every day. That is an amazing thing, and that is a place I think you can make money on.
Well,
because if you have the right show and you have an audience, my sense is you guys probably do this, is my guess.
Yeah, well, what we've noticed is when we do events now, our audience has gotten younger. And when I ask these guys who weren't listening to the show, some we just did a live event this past Thursday, and a guy told me he hadn't been listening up until 4 months ago, and we're seeing that happening. And when I ask these guys where they found the thing, and they're just like, well, we podcast it. And that is, you know, this 20 and early 30-somethings, that's what they're doing. And so that's why I think, A, the cause of it is television got into the psychology of the user, the on-demand model. with whether you're going to go Netflix or DVR, even to go back 10, 15 years with TiVo. But now radio is certainly going into that more on-demand consumption. But then the question is the monetization of the product to make it a lasting model. And so I know you kind of go back and forth with them. I don't know if you guys are in some form of detente or if you're still at an occasional social media war with Clay Travis. But he broke away from doing the terrestrial radio, didn't go to satellite, but went to do his own thing with the Facebook live show. And we had him on a few weeks ago, and I was asking about the monetization of it. And he said one of the tough parts for him is the ad execs at Fox Sports have the option of selling, you know, huge products when you're at Fox Sports. And so to go and sell what would essentially be a minor buy, relatively speaking, it's not something that they're doing. And so I wonder if the model itself has staying power, but it, of course, only will have staying power if revenue is generated. And so I'm curious as to what your experience or knowledge of that is.
Dear Lord, it's going to be painful to agree with Clay. But but I think he's correct, and I face this as well. I'm at a big place like Fox Sports, where Sports Illustrated is looking to do advertising deals across the board, you know, buy into our multiple mediums, buy into our magazine, buy into our digital site, and, you know, you also can buy into podcasting. It's very hard to sell the individual podcast, mostly because the money is not as big as other buys. So if you are a business person at one of these places and your job and you get commission from your selling, you are of course going to try to sell the bigger deal than a smaller deal. So this is just my thought. I have no idea if this is going to be the case. But I believe as we head forward, individual podcasters / broadcasters are going to have to hustle to find individual sponsors. But I think they can do that because if you can find someone who really is connected with your show or your podcast, and you as the talent, I hate that word, but you as the talent can make that kind of connection with a potential advertiser, and you cater to this advertiser, and you take care specifically of this advertiser, I think the podcast model can work. I just think that at a big place like mine, we may be heading into the future where the individual person hosting it, in this case me, has to have a second hat where they're almost a salesperson. Maybe there's the business side, people take care of the contracts and stuff. That's not something I do. But I think we're almost going to have to be our own marketers to find advertisers who are like-minded and inclined to sponsor the podcast. But I believe they're out there because I think that the one thing about the forum, and I think you guys would agree with me, is the engagement's through the roof. If you are investing in someone's media for 45 minutes, you have made a gigantic connection compared to, I'm just taking a look on BuzzFeed for 5 seconds at this list.
Right.
I mean, the people who, you know, I get, my numbers are nowhere near as big as Simmons, but let's say I get 50,000 people, 40,000 people listening to one of my podcasts. Generally speaking, they're listening to the whole thing. That's like 40,000 people who have invested an hour in my life. If I'm an advertiser, that's incredible value if I can figure out who the advertiser is who could target to those 40,000 people who would then buy that product. So that, I mean, I realize I just went on a long-winded answer.
No, I find it fascinating.
I think that's where it's going. I think you're almost going to, as a podcaster, have to figure out what is the best individual, singular advertiser, and that advertiser maybe is the person who sponsors the entire podcast series.
Richard, I also work at Fox Midwest here in St. Louis, and one of the things Fox is doing with its regions is streaming live product like Cardinals baseball. They're doing that, I would assume, in an effort to confront the problem of cord cutters. Do you think that that's the solution and that will save the cable industry?
I don't know if it's going to save the cable industry, but I think you have to get your product into as many hands as you can. It's very clear that there are so many people who are in the age of 25 who cable is just not part of their lives anymore, mostly at a cost, interestingly enough. I'm not so convinced that if the cost of cable went down or if maybe you can buy a singular channel, I would not be surprised. I mean, let's just use Fox or ESPN as an example. If you offered me Fox Sports 1 and it's only costing me $2 a month, and if I'm a 25-year-old, then I can sort of just pay that very quickly through like a PayPal or a credit card quickly. That might be a business model for somebody. But the streaming thing, I think it's twofold. One, I think you got to get your product in front of anybody. And two, if Major League Baseball is smart, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, they have to figure out ways to get baseball in front of younger people. So the demographics for that sport in terms of age are terrible. They continue to trend up. So baseball can talk, listen, you know, attendance is great. People still love our product. The regional ratings are good. All true. But the numbers in terms of the age demos are always heading in the wrong direction. And I think streaming games is a way, if nothing else, to try to find that new generation of baseball fans.
So many things over the last decade would be fascinating to discuss as far as media consumption and the shift of the landscape. But one you just brought up regarding the aging demographic of baseball, and in St. Louis, it's an outlier, Richard, because of the community as a whole is just engrossed with the game. But nationally, I think people would absolutely agree with that. But over the last decade, one thing that I've noticed, and this is with my peers, so you're talking people in their 30s, the consumption of soccer, of course, in particular, the Premier League. I mean, that's a mainstream thing now. Now, it isn't necessarily for older people, but it is certainly for younger, to the point that some would already argue that it's going to be more popular in the United States than perhaps some of the four major pro leagues, and the NHL certainly would be in that category, and perhaps even baseball, as young people are perhaps more apt to be wearing a Messi jersey than a Bryce Harper jersey.
Maybe. I mean, clearly the numbers for the Premier League and global soccer are up, and up significantly. So there's no doubt soccer is growing in this country. The disconnect, and this is, I think, an important one, is MLS is not. Look at the numbers for our domestic league, they're terrible. I mean, listen, they're not terrible. That's probably unfair. But they've never reached any kind of critical mass. You know, you'll get a game on Fox or ESPN drawing 200,000, 300,000 viewers. It's not a lot in the sort of reality of sports. So I agree with you, and I think there's no doubt that international soccer is on the rise. I think the demographics of the country have something to do with that. A lot of second-generation kids whose parents were maybe born in another country where soccer is the biggest sport, and they bring that sort of love to this country. Premier League numbers are good, but again, well behind baseball. You know, NBC may average a million and a half for the Premier League series over the course of their season. If you compare that to, let's say, the World Series, we're still talking, you know, 11 million less viewers. But I believe soccer is going to continue to grow. I'm just not ready to say that it's going to, you know, become the one of the big four sports. But I think hockey in particular has some issues in this country in terms of where it's going to be heading forward, because the TV ratings don't really go up. And baseball, obviously, as we've talked about, sort of has its own issues. The real true big four in this country, or big three, is pro football, of course, college football, and the NBA. And then there really is like kind of a line to the next sports in terms of if you're going to base it on television ratings or media consumption. I mean, the NFL is one, and really big separation. But then, you know, college football probably now is two, NBA is three. Maybe it certainly flips depending on what city you live in. And then I think there's a real drop off to baseball, and then another real drop off to hockey, soccer, etc.
You think some of that with baseball can be explained that there's just so many games?
I think so. I think that's part of it. And again, you know, you can sort of sell this story anyway. If you sell the story, if you're baseball on a regional level, well, baseball kicks butt. I mean, you guys would know this better than me, but I mean, the Cardinal numbers regionally, if the Cardinals are in playoff contention, are unbelievable. I mean, it would be interesting to see what the Cardinals numbers were in September in a pennant race versus, let's say, your average NFL game when the Rams were there. You know, that's a great, in certain markets, particularly when teams are going well, you know, baseball could be the best game in town. The Blue Jays market, for example, I mean, the Toronto games for Rodgers are just doing crazy numbers on a given, you know, 1.5 million fans watching those games on a given game. It's the national question, which is a big one. You know, if TBS or Fox puts on a national game on a Saturday or on a Sunday, and those numbers are not great. So that's where, like, the interesting disconnect is. It's that regionally, the game is pretty strong, and you're really into your team.
Yeah.
But why, unlike the NFL, or why, unlike the NBA, will the average sports fan not tune into TBS, let's say, to watch the Cubs versus the Giants, or watch the Red Sox versus the Rangers? And I'm not sure I have the answer to that. I just know that they're not doing it.
You have a theory for it? I know you don't have the answer, but do you have a theory? theories?
My only theory is, and I mean, it's not like I'm saying anything that people haven't talked about, is I think baseball, for a long time, you know, 10, 20 years, they didn't market individual stars. They marketed everything team versus team. And so the sport really has, more than ever before, feels like a regional. I shouldn't say now, but for so long, the sport really felt like a regional sport. They're trying more now, like Bryce Harper, you know, sort of pushing like Mike Trout nationally. I know Manfred talked about maybe speeding up the game a little bit, you know, having like a pitching clock so that things don't take a long time. But, I mean, my other thing, and again, this is, I'm not the first person to say this, I kind of think, too, that because baseball is not a sport that you gamble on, whether you gamble with your friends, whether you're gambling legally in Vegas, I think that has something to do with it, too. Because the big sports in this country, college football, pro football, even basketball to an extent, a lot of people bet money on those sports. Not only that, play fantasy with those sports, too, particularly football. And I think that might be part of it, too. It's interestingly enough, it's baseball's a hard sport to bet on a daily basis. And I think that has a factor, too. But honestly, I don't know. I think baseball's a great sport to be at, maybe the best sport to sort of attend live. So I don't know why that wouldn't necessarily translate nationally to TV, but it doesn't. And if Fox does not have a big team in the World Series, you know, a Chicago, a New York, or a Boston, they're dead. I mean, you remember like the Giants and like the you know, in Tampa Bay or something like that. I mean, the ratings just sink. So, you know, if you're a Fox executive in Los Angeles, you are on your knees right now praying the Cubs get to the World Series, because that could be a game changer for baseball, because I think that's a major national story if they make it.
Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated, with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. I really recommend subscribing to his podcast. And, of course, reading him on SI.com. Richard, we appreciate the time as always, sir. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for the time, guys. Appreciate it.
Hi, thank you, Richard. Of Sports Illustrated with us on the appliance discounter phone lines. Enjoyed that discussion. Yeah, I enjoyed both our discussions.
I think it's easy to understand why baseball doesn't do well on a national level during the regular season, is because that's not our team. And our team is playing also that day. When they do games on a Saturday or a Sunday, our team is also playing. So we'd much rather watch our team, and then are we going to watch 6 hours of baseball in a game day? Probably not. It's a little different when you
college football and the NFL.
Well, it's also, but they also watch their team. If the NFL comes on a Monday night, if that's your team you're watching, if it's not your team, your team's not playing.
It's
got no direct competition.
Once a week with college football and the NFL. So if you're going to binge watch for one day when you might have been watching every Cardinal game that week, you had enough after watching your own team play.
The gambling, I think. I don't even know who would dissent at this point on the gambling's importance to the NFL and to a lesser extent, I think, college football, but football as a whole. I don't think that necessarily would hold up with the NBA. I know people play daily fantasy with the NBA, but not nearly as much, of course, with fantasy football and then gambling with, you know, betting on the NFL and college football versus the others. So I don't know on that.
One of the keys to the NBA.
I do think the individual star thing is a big thing.
Yeah,
it is. And it's all, the NBA is huge in the biggest markets. It's huge in New York, Chicago, L.A. And I think that helps it a lot.
Salt Lake.
You think the NBA is coming back to St. Louis?
No, sir, I don't.
Doug, St. Louis sports team knows it takes hard work to reach goals. It's just a truth that applies to more than just our Redbirds and Blues. It goes for your financial goals as well. You work hard for your money. You deserve an investment strategy that lines up with your game plan. Edward Jones financial advisor Matthew Ehrenreich can help. If your investments aren't putting forth the effort, call Matt Ehrenreich, conveniently located at 191 Watson Plaza, Watson, across the street from Crestwood Bowl. His number is 314-965-0374, and you may or may not know he sponsored Deke Dotem's appearance when we broadcast from Sedgwick's.
Disappointing.
In Chicago.
I might have to switch Edward Jones agents.
Yeah, because of Matt's sponsorship. 314-965-0374. Matt and his team are anxious to find solutions for your retirement needs, so don't delay and call Matt. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC. Doug, Bertarelli Cutlery is a great sponsor of this program as
chop,
well.
Chop, chop, cheeky. Bertarelli Cutlery offers a wide array of sharpening solutions for the professional kitchen. Not just yours at all. The professional kitchen.
Nice.
They specialize in what they like to call a knife service. Once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, their friendly knife delivery specialist comes to your kitchen, exchange your dull knives for a freshly sharpened chopping blade. Chop, chop, Cheeky. No contracts. Customize your order with over 35 different blade styles and colors. They do restaurants, cafeterias, hospitals, schools, food trucks, meat markets, butchers, supermarket, you name it. They sharpen slicer blades, processing blades, grinder knives and plates. They also service food prep equipment like can openers, slicers, mixers, grinders, power drive machines, food processors, stick blenders. When was the last time you had your stick blender serviced? Okay. Kitchen aid mixers, VCMs, and other commercial equipment. That's Bertarelli Cutlery right there on the hill.
They can do my VCM?
You got one?
Mm-hmm.
Bring it in.
All right.
They'll fix it. You don't want a malfunctioning VCM.
No.
Or you've got more hell to pay than you know.
Chop, chop, Cheeky.
Richard Dyche was brought to you by DraftKings. Our DraftKings guest of the day. Had some great guests here today with Amy Trask and Richard Dyche. I enjoyed both those conversations. Those are my kinds of conversations.
Okay. Yes,
I enjoyed them.
All right.
What, you don't like talking to Doug?
No, guest-wise, that's my kind of conversation. Right. Kind of like, you know, you're asking questions you don't necessarily know the answers to, but you respect the that one opining. DraftKings, the sponsor of our guest of the day, the destination for one-week fantasy football. Use code 920. And play free with your first deposit. That's 920 to play free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes this week. One contest at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See website for details.
I have a difficult decision to make. I've got the number 3 overall pick in the KMOB fantasy football draft, and Todd Gurley's going to be sitting there, and I think he'd be the guy to take, but can I take him and root for Todd Gurley?
I agree with you. I was thinking about that for fantasy football. It's a tough spot.
I don't know.
And it's probably the only Ram that you really think about taking.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to.
Well, the truth is, if you think it'll help you win the league, you will take him. Because all this stuff
about hating
the Ram.
I want to be able to watch him and hate him, so I don't want to be. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I may shy away from him.
Who would you take then?
Maybe Antonio Brown, if he's still there. But my gut says go for the running backs because they're not that
many
of them.
Is it point per reception league?
Now, what did you just say?
Point per reception league,
no,
PPR.
It isn't. It isn't. Mm. It is not.
Wheelhouse in Clayton in downtown St. Louis, Doug, is where you can watch if you would like. It's locally owned and operated. Wheelhouse is the local college football headquarters for the SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. Wheelhouse is the NFL headquarters in St. Louis. Contact them and book your watch party. Email parties at wheelhousestl.com. 36 TVs with select game audio, 32-ounce big beers with 30 flavors to choose from, large from scratch menu, the best nachos in town served by an even greater staff, easily accessible, take the 11th Street exit off Highway 40, ample parking day and night, Wheelhouse Clayton at 15 North Central Avenue in Clayton, Wheelhouse downtown at 1000 Spruce Street, blocks from Busch Stadium. It's the Wheelhouse football season fast approaching. Those Gers are going to fight so hard and so fine for you in Morgantown, West Virginia, a week from Saturday.
Yeah. Be a rough way to get started. New coach, new system. I don't know.
Couch is burning.
I don't know. I have high hope for the defense, but they did lose two of their top defensive linemen last week. Disciplinary issues. What are you throwing?
I have some candy in my pocket. It was sitting in my car, and I know I won't be eating it, so if you want it, it's on the ground now. I think it was a spree.
Do you ever eat candy these days?
Not often.
I don't either. I just don't hardly ever eat candy. I like a good Hershey bar. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Almonds in there?
Mm. That's fine, with or without.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with or without.
Watch this, Jamie Almond.
Boy, you tied the two together nicely. But I don't eat hardly any candy.
You never say, you know what? I'm stopping off. I need a Twix bar right now.
No. No, do you?
Yeah, I'm fortunate that same way with, like, when I smoked. You know, it's been basically 10 years, and I would only smoke when I drank. But I never... I don't say never, but I hardly ever had a cigarette, like, just during the day. But a lot of people would get into smoking while they would drink, and then they get addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky. Because I feel like, you know, I do feel badly for people who kind of get hooked on junk food, and, like, they just have to have it. That dopamine rush. Oof. Oof, oof.
Oof. Oof. Oof, oof-da. They said that in Minnesota a lot. Oof-da.
What's that mean?
It's like, wow.
Oh, really? Well, we use it.
Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I find myself jonesing for pork fried rice.
Really? What about General Tso's with waffle fries?
Not the waffle fry part.
It'll hit me at night. I'll be watching TV, and I'll suddenly say, I must have some cherry chocolate Bardot frozen yogurt. My favorite type there. And I eat it right out of the carton. I say, this is wrong.
Does John Vaughn scold you for that?
No, he's usually somewhere else eating
When he goes into a corner in the basement and
right,
and just, stuffs his face.
So what happens? So then you go out and you rob a 7-Eleven.
No, I've got
a vendor.
I've got like three or four cartons of already right there waiting for me.
Do you buy it or does your wife buy it for you?
Yeah.
Does your wife buy it for
usually,
you?
Usually, yeah.
Oh, she's nice. You should take this opportunity to say thank you to your wife.
Thank you. I got to have some of this stuff. And I'll eat it. And sometimes I'll go through like half a carton. I say, what am I doing? Why would I do this? They say that's the one thing you should never do is eat ice cream right out of the carton because you eat way too much.
Who's they?
Nutritionists, people telling you how to keep in better shape. You should take a couple of scoops, and that's plenty. But when you eat out of the carton, you just keep eating. Oh, there's still more. You're eating. Oh, there's still some eating and eating. And it's bad.
So it's a frozen yogurt and opium where you just need that.
No,
have,
opium. I don't
not the opium? Opium?
No. No. That's my weakness for sure.
Opium or the...
the cherry chocolate cherry. Bordeaux.
What about the yearning touch of one of our listeners at a live remote?
I don't have a yearning for that, no.
It's time for the email today. And beedlity. Doug, we're giving away these Cardinal tickets for tonight's game, and they're courtesy of Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man. How about him? Okay. What a gesture.
Gesture and a half.
I saw him in here a little while ago dropping them off.
And you were happy that he didn't sexually harass you, because occasionally he will do that.
I was glad he didn't turn around and look this way, sure.
Good morning, guys. You've been nominated to join the Coyote Hall of Fame. It costs $10,000 to become members, and benefits include writing your own bio and induction speech. This is a unique opportunity to join the likes of George Michael, Billy Dee Williams, and Ween in this prestigious club. Your star power will greatly increase awareness of this group and make me 30 grand richer. Let me know if you have any questions. Thanks, Doug. That comes from the Crestwood Coyote.
Crestwood Coyote.
So that's fun. Hall of Fame.
It is. What Hall of Fame is it that you have to write him a check to get in?
Iggy's. Is that the one? Does he have to write a check?
No, I'm just saying that. I've heard. I don't want to cause any kind of turmoil.
Why not?
But it happens.
There's a Hall of Fame where you get the call. You get that, like, so when Ozzie Smith got the call in 2002, they said, all right, now
it's
you're checked
for Hall of Fame. I want to know what Hall of Fame it is.
It goes like this. It goes, hey, we want to induct you into the Hall of Fame. It'll be a ceremony. Oh, you want to bring your family. All right, well, that's, $250 a person.
Oh.
That's how it works.
Okay.
Oh, you want that? Okay, well, there's a little charge. Next thing you know, you're paying a nice chunk of money.
Yeah, well, forget that.
It happens.
Let's see. Oh, look, Doug, he's back. It's the Dan Marshall Leadership Institute.
Oh,
took a month off.
Sure.
Hi again, man. Welcome back to the Institute. How fitting it was that Thursday night's show, where you revealed the new 590 lineup, looked and sounded exactly like a condensed version of our 8 to 12 month reign of the man. I say 8 to 12 months because the duration is open for interpretation, depending on whether you believe dead air still counts as conducting business. Anyway, it was great to see you finally taking a few pages out of our playbook. First off, you went with a four-man show, just like I suggested you guys do 3 years ago. And boy, did it work. Why have the cat interrupt two other people when he can interrupt three? Charlie played the role of the college friend you bring home to hang out with your high school buddies and feels completely out of the loop the entire time. Every 5 minutes, he would just yell something out like, go Bears, just to let everyone know he was still there. But then eventually left early and probably texted Tim, just let me know the next time the cat is gone. Without Jay, 30 minutes of the show, tugging divorced women's feet, you had no other choice but to just fill most of the time with hack trivia contests. It's too bad you couldn't have got that Hawkstorm waitress with thigh tattoos to table dance the entire show. It's only a matter of time before paychecks start bouncing. Keep up the good work. That comes from the Dan Marshall Leadership Institute.
Dan Marshall Leadership Institute.
Oh, my God.
What?
It's good material. A lot of my Johns pay me extra to ride them bareback.
That's how we're starting this one.
I think I got to read it because it's sent in by the guy who gave us the prize.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
High risk, high reward. Last night's customer was not selfish like most. He was both a giver and a taker. One of those that brings his work home with him. So we played a game called Run Differential. He grabbed his ankles whilst his khakis were draped around them, and he boldly spelled run out loud 3 times. By the second run, he was done. That comes from Fred Garvin, male prostitute.
Fred Garvin, male prostitute. He's new.
Doug, listen up. This is a tale made for an old queen like you. Let's imagine that Hillary is campaigning in rural Arkansas. She's on a bunch of pills because of her poor health, yep. So she decides to go to something in the backwoods. She hears something rustle in the bushes. It's a copperhead. Turn to page 32 if you grab the snake. Turn to page 6 if you allow it to slither up to Hillary. Page 32, you saved her. Hooray, the end. Page 6, the snake sneaks slowly and silently behind the suit of pants. It rears up to bite Hillary's nether regions. It injects its warm venom. Hillary writhes on the ground. Doug, here are the real questions. Do you save Hillary, a fellow human, or do you kill the snake? Or possibly, does it change your whole mindset on snakes? Or the really real question, how do I get my stepdad's warm venom out of my chin shrubs? Mm. That comes Sebastian, the slimy snake wrangling
just
boy.
Awful. Just awful. Sebastian, slimy snake rambling boy.
Wrangling.
Wrangling boy.
Guys, Plops here. I thought I was off to a rough start this morning. Then you guys got pinkled by Larry Nickel. So everything sort of leveled out for me. The recap today was questionable yet thorough. Larry clearly said John Candy competed last night. I was under the assumption the reports of his untimely passing in 94 were true, but I'll be the first to admit when I'm wrong. He also spoke of a competitor named M. Allure. He sounds neat. His mention of Ed McMahon being in the ring was also odd, as once again I was under the impression that said gentleman had passed away. Then, of course, Luth squared off against Roman Reigns, a match he told us happened and so eloquently followed up with no information as to who won. Damn it, Tim, I don't know why, but I like that. Guys, this is perfect because anyone that knows me knows that I like my wrestling reports the same way I like my bowel movements. Thin and without much substance or accuracy.
No.
Thanks. That's the elusive Misty Plops.
Elusive Misty Plops, assistant program director.
What time is it? How much time do I?
9:59.
Then I'll have one more, especially when it comes from the Barnhart Brawler, because you like to make sure I get him in.
No, I don't.
So I had this twink by the haunches, and I was fixing to, sorry, didn't hear you come in. May I help you? It's okay, yeah, I guess I can do an email. I'm going to start my university called Eastern Missouri. It'll be located in Sunset Hills, and our programs will focus on making crappy arguments on the internet. Some of our courses offered will be Memes of Fake Crap 101, Logical Facilities and How to Commit Them, How to Be a Victim When Your Horrible Argument is Called Out, Feelings Over Facts 300, and a class on straw men, where we teach you how to totally misrepresent the other side, but we don't actually teach you what a straw man is so you can claim ignorance when someone accuses you of doing it. Enroll today in Eastern Missouri, and for $25,000 a year, you could someday be a proud emo alum. Do good, avoid evil. That's the Barnhart Brawler.
Awful. Barnhart Brawler, lunatic leftist.
That's what we have for the email of the day. Show me what you got, little mama. Show me what you got, little lady. Show me what you got, short A. Doug.
Go ahead.
For a fellow by the name of Garvin, Fred Garvin, male prostitute.
Not even close. The best email was the Dan Marshall Leadership.
Yeah, I mean, Sebastian, the slimy snake wrangling boy, was good, but Dan Marshall Leadership. I don't know if this guy ever loses. When he chooses to play, he wins. He's the Mayweather of this competition. Dan Marshall Leadership Institute has shipped another one. First time since June, but an email today, and that's Cardinal tickets for tonight, courtesy of Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man, who may or may not be Fred Garvin. Male prostitute. Frank's up next. It's the Lion's Choice. Famous roast beef hand up to Frank Cusimano in the Hollywood Casino Press Box. It's oh so good. Doug, it's called Lion's Choice. Audio Express, if you're like so many others, you're sick and tired of the below average sound and features that your factory car stereo system offers you, why continue to live with unacceptable sound and features when all you need to do is visit the pros at Audio Express. Own it today. Pay for it later with Audio Express's special no credit needed payment plan. Improve your drive time. Visit Audio Express today. Frank's up next. For Peyton, for the Plowmet, for my brother Kevin, for the Sea Monster, for Jimmy the Cat Hayes, and for Douglas Elvin-Vaughn, I'm Tim McKernan. This has been Ryan Kelly Morning After on CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and Inside STL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios.